Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com. Welcome to the podcast of Around the House with Eric G. You're listening to the first hour of the radio show. Thanks for listening. For more information, head to our website, aroundthehouseonline.com. Now, let's get to the show.
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G. From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it, and Eric is here to guide the way. All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio. Welcome to Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. This is your new home improvement source across the country. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Hey, I want you to join us on Facebook because this show, you might hear on the weekends on the radio or anywhere across the world in the podcast community, but it goes all week long, all across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and more importantly, in Around the House Nation, which is our closed group over there on Facebook that you can join. And just take a look. You can find that. Just search up Around the House with Eric G. and you can get us there. And if you have any questions, you can message us on Facebook or head over to our website, which is aroundthehouseonline.com, and you can catch us all right there. Well, I got a fun show. We've got a great show coming up ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
We've got a couple different subjects that I want to talk about. First off, how to do some of those budget, quick fix, awesome return projects, but not be too expensive.
Yep, not hit your pocketbook too hard.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do right on a budget. Put the money in your pocket. Maybe get a little value out of your house while you out of your house while you're doing it, but make that big impact, because this is that kind of lingering winter time of year for everybody. Everybody's starting to think, okay, holidays are well behind us. Springtime hopefully is around the corner, but it's like, all right, what can I do to make things look a little bit different? I've been stuck in the house way too long.
Especially through the holidays, those 2 months of basically just staying inside, we're all kind of itching to get back outside to brighten up our areas.
So one of the ones, the first one I want to talk about here, which is kind of an important one, because it can put one of the most biggest, kind of the biggest amount of dollars back in your pocket, is refreshing that front door and putting on a new lock set.
Okay.
So you think about it, your front door, that is that first impression for everyone that pulls up out front and walks into your space. So if you've got that dinged, dented, discolored with the old gold lock set that doesn't look good, the weather strippings leaking energy right out the front door, diving into this can put money back in your pocket, add some value, look really good, and add some security.
And it's also not that big of a project.
Depending on what you do. I mean, think about it. You can go get a quart of paint and get that door done. Now, here's my secret. Take a nice 60-degree day. No bugs, get it where it's a good day outside. That way you can pop that door off the hinges, pull the pins, take it out, put it in the garage, front door. Maybe you can put some plastic up to contain some of the energy, but you can take it down and paint it right. And make sure, what I would do first on this project, I'm just going to kind of walk through it real quick, how I would go about it. I would make sure that you don't have any problems structurally with the door. Make sure that the seams of where the wood door is put together or where the fiberglass or steel door is, that there's nothing coming apart. Because if you've got to do a door repair, that can be an issue. But what I would do is I'd make sure that that door is fitting in the doorway correctly. If you've got a sand down an edge or plane down with a block plane down an edge, make sure that this is in there perfectly. But what I do even before I take it down to finish, if you're putting a new door lock on, I would test fit the door lock first.
Okay.
Here's why. If you've got to do some chiseling, if you've got to do some cutting, if you got to do some drilling to make this fit right, and you're painting the door now, you put a new fresh coat of paint on it. Wouldn't you want to do that after? So you want them to go, yeah. So you know what I mean? So I want to make sure that that test fits, because if I paint it, I want it ready to go back in.
But after you paint, you want that after to be the last thing you do.
So I don't want to have to paint it and then go, oh man, now I put too much paint on, the door closes too tight. So I put three coats of paint on it, put that extra paint. Now I built up enough thickness of paint that it's not closing correctly. So I want to test fit all my stuff on there first before I take the door off. Put your new lock set in. Take a look at some of the new stuff out there. There's some technologies out there that are awesome. We'll talk about smart home technology later, but there are some cool locks that you can let people in that is digital. You can unlock it for people that come over. If you've got a kid that loves leaving his or her lock in their gym locker,
or their keys,
to get in, there's a solution for that. We'll talk about that next hour. But get that all test fit. Make sure that you've got the right weather stripping that you're going to put on last. So here's what I would do. Then I would, after you've done that, take the door down, put it on some sawhorses out there. Might be a two-person job if it's a heavy wood door. Get all the locks and everything off it, ready to go. Do some good cleaning, some good sanding. Follow the paint manufacturer's instructions from your local paint store that they gave you. Follow the instructions for that paint to paint this. Make sure you test it for lead. If you've got an old door, make sure there's no lead paint so you're not contaminating yourself or others with that. Get it all painted up. Make it look good. Maybe you're going to spray it. Maybe you're going to brush it. If you're going to use a brush, use a really good brush. Let it dry. You can build the little jig that you can flip over so you can paint the one side, flip it over, and it's not resting on it because it'll rest on the ends like the top and the bottom.
Okay.
And you could actually, they make door jigs that you can actually do that you can flip over.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
That way you can paint both sides. That way you don't have to wait for the one side to fully dry.
So that you can flip it over.
Flip it over. So there's ways to get around that. There's some cool tools out there that you can get before you start the project. Then once it's in there, you got it dried. You've got it really dried. You put your door lock, get that kind of set up on it. Then you can go up and put the hinges back on and pins back on and put the door in. The last thing you want to do is put the weather stripping on and get it dialed in. Now, if it's got weather stripping on the bottom as part of the door, make sure you put that on the door before you put it up. That way you've got it all assembled.
During the testing period. That way you know what space you're dealing with.
Get everything tested. If you're putting in a new bottom sweep on the door, make sure that that's on the testing part. It's fitted before you even paint the door. And then account for, you know, a few mils of thickness in there for paint, because depending on how thick the paint, how many coats, make sure you're good. Now, if you're sanding it, you're going to actually be taking a little more material off, so you're probably going to be a net zero on that, because you're going to probably sand beyond the finish that's there anyway, and make sure you're dialed in for that. And now you've got a project that's going to save you energy, give you some more security, and more importantly, it's going to add some value to your house, because you now just gave yourself some killer curb appeal.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite things when we talk about cost versus value, which we did just a few weeks ago, is a little bit about how much value that does add when it comes to what you can see from the curb, the front door, the garage door, all of that. It can really matter.
And that's a twofer, because you got energy savings and curb appeal.
Yep.
And then it's almost, you know, the trifecta with the third, because you've got security in there as well. So there's a lot of things with that you can do just on a door that really can help you with that curb appeal. Now, one of the other things that I think that is good too is just interior painting. And we're going to bring in our painting experts into the show here in the coming weeks here. We're not going to get to it today because we just don't have time. But interior painting is one of those things that you can transform a space. I mean, literally, you can go in, paint it. You can be bold with your colors, embrace colors right now. Colors are big. Look at some of the colors of the year. Buy good paint. Buying cheap paint will cost you more money than buying good paint. I'm not saying go out and buy the $200 a gallon high-end European paints that have been imported in. I'm just saying go buy a good paint with the right sheen for what you're doing. That's where you're going to get burned. Having the right tools, having the right materials will save you money in the long run.
I mean, I know you're the expert. You're the interior designer, but you're creating an environment.
You are.
You're not just, oh, I like this color. It has nothing to do with, oh, I like that color. It's how does this color fit in your space?
And think about all the other things you have going on. Is it going to match the rugs that you just pulled away to paint? Make sure that this color jives with everything you're going to do and that it's not clashing. If you're putting new other stuff in there, get that paint sample. Do not pick your paint colors off the internet, people. It will go sideways.
It won't look like that.
No, I can adjust your monitor to make that color anytime you want to. That tells you how bad that is. Have a paint chip in your hand and make sure that you paint. Go get a sample of it. put it on the wall, make sure it looks good with everything else, and make sure you got it dialed in. Then you can do a good paint job. But as with anything with painting, prep work is always the biggest thing. The painting part's kind of the easy. Get it done right, and you're going to save some money by doing it yourself. And it's a real basic DIY project. And if you're looking for a basic one, paint that room first before you go dive into that door project. Because once you've got your painting techniques of how to run a brush and that kind of stuff, it's going to make it a lot easier. And once you've got that time under your belt for the new homeowner, makes it easier all the way down the road. And you're not going to be doing it twice. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk more about some of these super cool, fun projects you can do to make that house look good on a budget. We'll do that just as soon as Around the House returns. Why? Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is your home improvement source every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Man, it's been crazy how well that this show's been growing with thanks of our friends of the network, because I'm loving all these new areas.
Absolutely.
And so we've been really having fun with all of our new friends in Pennsylvania now, Eastern Pennsylvania and Chicago. You know, we had before that Seattle, and we just keep growing and growing. But I just want to make sure we get out our little challenge to people out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I want to see the gear.
Yep. First person out there to take Around the House gear, which you can get over in aroundthehouseonline.com. Head over to our store over there. If you have a hat or a coffee mug, take it to your town's famous place. Go take a picture of it. And if you've got that gear, I'm going to send you a hat. Now, this is going to be for the first person in Chicago, Philly areas. First person to do in Chicago and Philly, I'm going to send you a hat myself from that same store. So there's a little purchase necessary because there's another way to do this, but I want to be able to get out there. If you want to go out and do that, I'm going to send you something personally and we'll message you on Facebook. So
I would really love to see either, you know, Philadelphia out the Liberty Bell or, you know, in Chicago.
Let's go to the Rockies. I mean, get out in front of our favorite cheesesteak places over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many places out there. Find something cool. And, of course, Willis Tower in Chicago. I'd love to see it up there, even down on the Miracle Mile. Frank Lloyd Wright House. There's a lot of cool places to do it. Let's have some fun with this.
I want to see it.
There's your little challenge. So, and we're going to keep doing little challenges like that. So, first person in Chicago, first person in Eastern PA. I want to see that, and we're going to have some fun with that.
Yeah, so. Post that up on the Around the House Therapy Facebook page, and we'll reach out to you, and we'll make sure to find a way to get you your prize.
You got it. So,
did want to say, we did get a question last week during our Facebook Live that we did.
Oh, yeah.
That we didn't get a chance to answer last week.
Thanks for reminding me about that
one. So Linda's asking about the cost of, or the expected average cost for adding a shower to an existing bathtub, adding new town green board. The question is not greatly worded. Adding new town green board is in the walls and it backs up to my other shower.
Okay. So if you've got a bathtub, maybe it's like a soaking tub, for instance, and you've got that and you want to add a shower above that. Now, if you've got the normal kind of wall tub shower combination type controls, You can go in and add a shower into that as long as you've got the right valve. So it's about that valve. If they had a universal valve that put in there and it had the tub spout that came out to fill, but there's no shower above it. So we get into the plumbing part of that. So if you've got the right valve, which has it going up where you can put a diverter on that, and basically how the water comes out the shower head is on that tub spout, there's typically something there that either pulls down or lifts up that you shut that off to basically shove the tub spout, diverts the water out the top. It's open normal time because water always takes the path of least resistance. So the key with this is if you've got a shower valve that can be converted to a shower. If not, you're going to replumb that part. And so that's the plumbing part to be able to put in there, run a pipe up. You're going to put a little bracket up there. It's almost a, it's an elbow fitting that has a place to mount to a board up there. So you're going to have to open that wall up a bit so you can properly mount the shower head for the shower arm to go in to put a, to put that in. That's quite frankly in this, the easy part. Because I'll be honest, Greenboard is not a product that I'm going to put tile or any other real surface on because Greenboard is a moisture resistant drywall.
Okay.
It is not something that I'm going to put tile on. It's not something that I'm going to put a bathroom wall system on either. I'll be honest, there are better products out there. I want something that's going to be waterproof, that if moisture gets through something, that it's going to be able to handle it. Greenboard's not the product for that. I like Greenboard in a bathroom where there's nothing on it. You're going to do mud and tape and drywall, and it's something that's going to withstand moisture in the room. It's great for that. But it's not something I'm going to use in a shower anymore. 20 years ago, it was commonly used as a shower. Nowadays, not the chance. Not going to use it. I'm going to put in a Hardiebacker or a Weddy or a Schluter wall system that I can actually waterproof and do that with. And so then you've got to put in some kind of a material in there. Maybe it's tile. Maybe it's acrylic panels. There's Corian products now that you can get. Maybe it's even a laminate. Maybe there's maybe it's just one of the plastic shower wall kits. But nonetheless, I still don't use Greenboard in those because it's not a durable material, and you're gonna have a moldy mess when it's all said and done. So, yes, it can be done. Can be kind of expensive depending on if you're bringing a plumber in to do it, and to have somebody come in and do that. If you're doing tile, to do that conversion over to take a tub, you could have. And you have a tile wall and you do all that stuff in the shower, you can have $5,000 or $6,000 and a drop of a hat to do it inexpensively.
And this also doesn't sound like it's a quick weekend DIY project.
No, it's not. I mean, you're going to have weekends into it because by the time you get it down, you get the plumbed up, you got it going. And then by the time you get your, let's say you've got your tile board or anything else in there, you could blast through a weekend pretty quick before you lay tile. And then you want to let that tile set up before you do you put your grout in and then you need to let that grout set up well before you use it. So you can have a weekend of that project pretty quickly, nickel and diamond at it. And that's it for the expert DIYer. It's not the easiest DIY project. So you almost want to bring a remodeling contractor in. If this is it's expert level stuff to do it right. And if you go in and test it and do it wrong, you've got a water leak and now you can do tens of thousands of dollars of the damage. So this is on the more difficult side of projects to do it correctly. That's where you bring in the plumber. And if you want to do a wall system in there, yeah, you can do it, but make sure you've got all the waterproofing correct to get it done right.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Linda, for asking the question on the Facebook page. If anyone else wants to ask us a question, hit us up on the Facebook page on any of our posts or send us a message, or you can give us a call, 971-233-8992.
All right. Well, I do want to get back here when we come back from the break. I want to get back to our top things you can do around the house that are just kind of giving you that bang for the buck of getting stuff dialed in, because there are so many things you can do to your house on a budget using quality materials are going to hold up together. And that's kind of, maybe it's some flooring stuff. Maybe it's some, I got a kitchen one we'll do next, which is kind of my fun one that'll get things kind of cleaned up, give it a fresh look and get it back into the 21st century. And we're going to do that here just as soon as Around the House returns.
And you're listening to Around the House with Eric G.
Eric G, this is where we talk home improvement every weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
All right, we've been talking about, you know, some of those top things you can do around your house on a budget. It makes it just feel good. Look good, feel right, all those things. Do it on a budget. You don't have to go out and buy the cheap stuff that's going to fail. At the same point, there's a lot of little things you can do that kind of gives it just that extra little kick in the step that you're like, oh, that looks put together. One of my favorites, the kitchen.
Okay.
So some of the things you can do in the kitchen, one of the easy ones is, let's say you've got those old knobs and handles from 1995. Maybe they got the blue roosters on them from the chickens and stuff, you know, from that just...
It was real big in the 90s.
Oh, man. That was an 80s, 90s thing. It looked really good. Now it looks like it's your grandma's old kitchen. You got to do something with it. Well, maybe you don't have the money to go in and spend a six-figure dollar to fix that up and do that kitchen remodel, right? But you want to just give it a little kick in the step, you know? So something like that. What I do is I go into the kitchen and I look at what my metals are. Now, two-tone metals are hot right now. So you can have like a brushed brass and a flat black and you can do some stuff with it. But if you've got those like plastic handles and stuff, go in and figure out, okay, what is my other color of metal? So if you've got stainless appliances and you've got maybe a chrome faucet or a gold faucet, I'd go, oh, I'm going to do a stainless brushed handle, or I'm going to do something that complements that, you know, that faucet in the kitchen. So if you've got that brushed brass, new brand new faucet, go get one handles and knobs that match that. So it all kind of comes together. You can go do that on a Saturday. It's awesome. And then all of a sudden you've got something that looks good, feels good. It's just a comfortable place to be. So that's one of those little tips that you can do that doesn't take much. You might have to get a screwdriver and maybe a drill. But if you've got knobs, it's easy because almost every knob will fit. Just make sure you get the right screw length because there's different ways they've attached them. On a door, it'll just go through the cabinet door. But sometimes on a drawer box, it'll go through the drawer box and the drawer front. So you need a longer screw for that. So make sure you got the right hardware to do it. But for a few $100, you can get something pretty decent. Make sure you get something that's going to be solid brass so it'll hold up. And the other secret, get a few extra and put them away. Maybe put them up over the, you know, put them in the back of a drawer someplace. So if you wear that finish out on maybe the silverware drawer or a common place, you can freshen that up. Because I tell you what, knobs and handles after a year or two, they kind of disappear.
Yeah.
You can't find the exact same one.
Well, that, and especially after a little bit, the ones that you have are going to lose that shine.
Yep. So you can take those ones that have worn out a little bit, that maybe abused, and fix it. And one other thing, too, to make sure, too, pay attention to on handles, how far they stick out. Because if you've got a poorly designed kitchen where maybe the dishwasher's in the corner of a U-shaped kitchen or something like that, make sure that that handle doesn't stick out farther than your current ones do. Because you could have some collision issues where a drawer on the other side doesn't open up in a corner, or you can't get the Lazy Susan to open up right. Make sure you take a look at that projection of the handle. It's a good little tip. And so go out and get something nice, put it in there, last a long time. And if you do a kitchen remodel down the road and you still like it, guess what? Screwdriver, Phillips screwdriver, you can swap them out, put them on your next kitchen. But if that's the case, buy a bunch of extras so you got space for them all.
But I mean, that's just a nice project to handle over the weekend, even a day. You can probably you can knock that out in a day and just, you know, re-up, refreshen it. It brings the whole kitchen together. It flows. And it really gives it an identity.
Exactly. Now, one of the things I like to do, too, that's really a smart one, is refreshing old flooring. And you think, oh, that's kind of boring. Walk into a kitchen, and maybe they got the 12 by 12 porcelain white tiles, right? And that grout looks hammerfied.
Yeah.
That white grout, which
it's
do white grout. It's now black, gray, brown, depending on where in the kitchen it is. That is one of those things that I always recommend. And I'll be honest, for grout cleaning, unless you've got a steamer and some of that other stuff, that's not the easiest DIY project. I like to bring the professionals in there. You bring in that professional grout cleaner. They come in, take a look at it, and guess what they can do? They can come in and clean that up. And basically what they do, they'll go through and they will make sure that that is hospital sanitary clean because they'll steam clean it. And then they can seal it up. And that way, when it's all sealed up, you've got something that's not going to get dirty again. And so you can take that floor that looks just beat up, or even that shower surround. You know, you got all that kind of the orange and black and green mildews growing in the shower. Same kind of thing. If you take a look at that tile, you can refresh that. I hate doing, I'd rather use the steam than the chemicals. The chemicals will work somewhat, but now you're just putting all that stuff back in your house.
Yeah.
The steam, it cleans it, it sanitizes it, and then you can go back and use a really good sealer. When was the last time you sealed the grout in your house? Right? Yeah. Nobody remembers to do that. When was the last time you sealed that granite? Did you have granite that you should be sealing every year or 2 years or 3 years? Or did you buy it that was pre-sealed and they've got a warranty? Think about when that stuff has to be done, because now you're protecting it. Especially if it's a soft product like marble or something like that, make sure that you've got that dialed in. But with floors, tile floors, that's an easy one. Now, if you've got hardwood, it's a little harder, but you can keep that clean. You know, I've used some of the Bona polishes. Now, a lot of the hardwood guys don't like that stuff because you're basically just putting a wax on top of stuff and it's harder to go back and refinish it. But in rentals before, I've gone in and hit it with that and it gives a nice little wax protection layer on top of it and it looks pretty good. But if you're gonna strip it, I've had problems with floors that had really bad finishes and somebody used that stuff and the wax gets in the wood down below and now stain doesn't want to go in and you fight that. So be careful with what you're doing, because you can create a bigger problem with some of those wax finishes that are those kind of topical top coat cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you've got linoleum, like an old linoleum that takes linseed oil, you can go in and restore those. And I'm not going to get into all the details of how to do that here, but if you've got that old hard linoleum where the linseed oils come out of it, you can go back and restore that old linoleum to look a lot like new by sanding and adding oils back to it. And by doing that, now you can get that old floor shined right back up again. That's one of the cool things about real linoleum. And I'm not talking vinyl flooring. I'm talking about that real linoleum. And that can be a cool product if you go back and restore it. And it can look like $1 million. You get in there and sand it. Jump on YouTube. There's a bunch of restoration things. It's not going to make for good radio for me to go step by step with that. But you go through that, it looks solid. And you can keep that vintage element in your house if you've got that 1930s or 40s linoleum.
Looks good. Yeah, refinishing it, make it pop again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks really good that way. And then, you know, one of the other things, too, and I like the flooring thing. One thing you can do that also makes a big difference is go around and clean up the baseboards around the house. So all your base trim. And if you got to go through and repaint it, caulk it to the floor, repaint it. If you've got a, you know, of course not with carpeting, but if you're getting into hardwood floorings, you're getting into vinyl flooring or tile, get that all sealed up, get that filled in. Getting those trims looking good is that last little detail. I got to go through, do mine still. I've got kind of the first coat on a lot of it. I got to go through my house and install some more base trim and stuff. It's one of those details that I got to get done. But once it's done, oh my gosh, it looks stunning. And those details are huge. So pay attention no matter where you're at to those details. Is the trim right? Is it installed right? Does it look good? Is it hanging off the wall? Those are those little things that are great projects. But when they look ratty, it makes your whole house look ratty. Just the door jamb walking in a front door, if it's been beat up and split and kicked in and everything else, looks dumpy.
Yeah. It's not the first impression that you want to give to somebody coming to your house.
Get those details cleaned up and just locked in. And the more crisp those details are, the finer looking house you have. And it's just no different when you're painting, you know, and we talked about that with painting. If you get those lines super clean and crisp, and it's somewhat impossible if you've got a heavy texture to get those lines that crisp, but if you get them as crisp as you can, it just looks more put together. It looks more professional. You got a beautiful place. So those are those things you can do to really make things look good on a budget without having to get into heavy pocketbook stuff. Because, you know, we'll talk about coming up here about some other painting projects you can do in other rooms, but again, those are ones that I think are really good. We come back here, I want to talk about some things like dealing with hard water in your house. And we're not going to get into the weeds on that, but cleaning up some of those things can make your house look good, because if you've got hard water, it's destroying your faucets, your showers, all these other things, refrigerators. And we're going to do that when we come back, because I think that's one that'll save you some money and make things look good. I'm Eric G. We'll be back with Around the House.
You threw my clothes out.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is your home improvement source every single weekend. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Let's wrap up our thoughts here on this because we could do four shows out of this subject about cool little things you can do to your house on a budget that are really going to give you some enjoyable solutions that either add value to your house, they stop maybe something else from happening. You can be very preventative. And that's what this one is here. This one here is basically treating your water coming into your house. There's so many people that I go into their houses or I'm talking with their problems and they've got like hard water deposits all over the place, or they've got iron stains everywhere. Or like my buddy Jerry, and I talked about it a few weeks ago, his hot water heater hadn't been flushed in 20 years and it was nearly full of hard water sediment.
Which is what you can expect from water that's been there for 20 years.
Yeah. So by the way, when was the last time you flushed your water heater? There's another one of their little tips. Oh, really? Been that long? Probably time to do it again. Make sure you turn the power off or the gas off before you do it because you don't want to burn the unit up when it's sitting there dry. But here's the thing. Getting that under control can, one, make it healthier for you. And two, it can make it easier on all your appliances like your refrigerator, your sinks, and your toilets and that kind of stuff. So here's what I would do. I would not send you down to the hardware store to go pick up a water filtration unit or a water softener because you don't know. Find in your local area a water filtration company that will come out and maybe even for free or for a nominal fee, test your water with a lab test. And they'll tell you what's in your water and how to get rid of it. Because a lot of these one-size-fits-all filtration units take a lot of great minerals that are healthy for you
out of your water.
You know, you want those in your water. That's that taste of being really good water. You want that. What you do want to do is get rid of all those, you know, solids that are floating in that water that are now in there that are going to create that hard water that's going to make you use more soap, that's going to coat your clothing and that kind of stuff. So take some time, make it so that shower door is clean in the morning when you don't have to spend so much time squeegeeing things, or you jammed up your ice maker because you've just loaded it up with hard water deposits. Or even more importantly, I don't want to get in the way of my coffee maker in the morning.
No.
So again, these things can be taken care of super quickly with a filter, a filtration unit, or even a water softener, depending on what you've got to go. And there's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but get the lab work done, do your research, find a good company, and stay on top of it. And one, it's going to make things last a lot longer. I've seen people have to replace faucets 5 years down the road because they had so much acidic water that was filled with so many minerals, it was just making the finish fall apart.
Well, and like those high-end shower fixtures, like those can clog up super easily if you're dealing with hard water.
Oh, yeah. Why do you want to mess with that? So just spend some time, get that done. And, a filter might only be a few $100, depending on what you're dealing with. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. Now, one last one I want to do before we go out to break. This can be a good one. A ceiling fan. One, it makes it more comfortable if you're trying to move air around. And more importantly, it can save you some energy because if you're mixing that air around in your house, maybe it's over a staircase or at some place where you're having a problem with airflow, man, it works so good.
To balance out.
Yeah, you can balance your system out a little bit. You're moving air around. You know, you're lifting air up or pushing it. Don't forget, fans have two speeds. Have multiple speeds, so two directions.
And each direction does something different.
Yeah, if you want to move air from the top down, you're going to have it so it pulls air down. If you want to pull the cold air and get it up higher, you're going to switch it around the other way. So don't forget that fan reverses and it'll make a
usually a little difference. Button on the side that I think.
Button on the side. Maybe it's a pull chain. Could be one way or the other, but make sure you get it stopped before you do it. No sense burning the fan while you're doing it. But again, spend the time on that. And there's a ton of these projects, which we're going to address later on. And I'm not even getting into home technology because now you can control these things with different remote controls and that kind of stuff. Touch your hand, touch your voice, all those different things. You can do all those things. So pay attention to what you need around your house. But just a simple ceiling fan for a few $100, get a good one that's quiet and make sure you got something that uses an LED light so you don't have to worry about light bulbs and stuff. But spend the time, do it right. Make sure you have the right bracket in the ceiling. If you're replacing a ceiling fan, make sure that box is right up there. Because if you put this in a regular plastic box and you put a big 60-inch fan up there, the chance of that falling down is really high. Now you've got drywall and electrical repairs as well. Plus somebody probably had a fan land in the middle of the living room
or staircase. Yeah, hopefully it didn't hit anyone.
Yep, that could get somebody hurt. So that's a real easy one. It can be a dramatic one. You can go vintage, you can go steampunk, you can go contemporary. It's not just your grandma's ceilings fan anymore. So if you do that right, it'll be a good project and it'll save you some money while you're doing it. When we come back, we're going to dive into a whole new subject of smart homes just as soon as Around the House returns. Thanks for listening to Hour 1 of Around the House with Eric G. That is the radio show. Now, let's tune into Hour number 2. But first, let's like, follow, subscribe to any of the podcast formats you're listening to, whether it's SoundCloud or Spotify or iHeartRadio. Any one of those formats sure help us out if you do that, and it'll help us spread the word of Around the House. Thanks for listening. Let's hit Hour number 2.
Hey, it's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand-molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.